Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Susan Giesman about her book, Making the Afterlife Connection: The Journey from Doubt to Knowing That Death Is Not the End. Suzanne is a spiritual teacher recognised on the Watkins list of the 100 most spiritually influential living people. Others on the list include Pope Francis and the Dalai Lama. She was recently honoured with the prestigious 2024 Humanities Team Spiritual Leadership Award. Past recipients include Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela. She now guides people to enjoy a consciously connected and divinely guided life. Suzanne has authored 15 books, 6 best-selling HemiSync recordings, and YouTube videos that have reached millions of viewers. Hi, Susan. Thanks a lot for coming on my podcast.
Thank you so much, Simon. Great to be here.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called Making the Afterlife Connection: The Journey from Doubt to Knowing That Death Is Not the End. Could you give us your background as a Navy commander, senior aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and what happened on 9/11?
You bet. I knew from a young age that I wanted to join the military, and I did get a commission as a naval officer right out of college. And I served for 20 years in a variety of tours, none of them at sea, because when I joined the Navy, women were not allowed on most ships. But I very much enjoyed my time and got to be a commanding officer of a shore unit. And the greatest honor, as you just mentioned, was in my final assignment when the head of the United States Armed Forces, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, asked me to be his aide-de-camp. And that was a very exciting tour of duty. We got to fly on Air Force One with the president and go to top secret hearings on Capitol Hill. But we were on our way to England, Simon, where the general was going to be knighted by Queen Elizabeth, when we got word about the attacks on the World Trade Center towers. And the chairman looked at me and he said, "Take us back to Washington." So I went up to the cockpit and told the pilot we were going back. And he looked at me and he said, "Commander, our flight path is going to take us right over Manhattan." And by that time, every other aircraft in U.S. airspace had been grounded. We had fighter jets escorting us as we flew over Manhattan and saw the plume of smoke billowing up. We didn't realize at the time that the towers had collapsed. We returned to Washington, D.C. and went back to find our office building, the Pentagon, that we had just left hours earlier, on fire, and walked around the outside of it. I stepped over jet engine pieces on the grass and stared at this gaping hole. And Simon, that was when I started asking my very first deep spiritual questions on that day. Like, why were some people right there and are now no longer here? And why are other people here? What random choice was this? And I had no spiritual answers for the kinds of questions I was asking. It was a very distressing time in my life because I was raised with no religion, no spirituality, had no awareness of an afterlife, and didn't know what to do with all the feelings that that event brought up within me. So I just stuffed them down inside and decided I was going to retire and literally sail off into the sunset with my husband. That was long our dream. And I knew another Navy commander who was 2 weeks away from retirement and was killed on 9/11. So I didn't want that to happen to me. So the day I had my 20 years in, I was retirement eligible and I left the military and sailed away from it all. But I know that you can't run away from the lessons that your soul came here to go through from certain experiences. And we're all here to evolve and to grow. And my big wake-up call came in a much more personal way than 9/11. It came when we got the word while sailing off the coast of Croatia that my husband's daughter, Susan, my stepdaughter, I'm Suzanne, she's Susan, had been struck and killed by a lightning strike. And she was 6 months pregnant with our only grandchild. So this was a double tragedy for our family. And there was no running away from that. So, of course, I asked those questions again. Well, how could somebody so young die? She was 27 in the prime of her life, a Marine sergeant, so happy in her marriage, happy to be pregnant. And the pivotal point for me, Simon, was when I was at her funeral and looked down at her body in the coffin and just had an epiphany. I just knew that you can't kill the soul. I didn't know what the soul was, but I knew it was the part of us that gives us life and vitality, vibrancy, and that Susan had to still exist in some form. I know now that that was my own soul's inner knowing, nudging me to go down a different path.
So were you a materialist, like a real strong atheist, or were you just kind of open to everything?
I was open. I was raised in a family where my parents disdained religion. I don't know why, but we didn't talk about it. They didn't take us to church. I believe one of my parents was probably an atheist, the other an agnostic. So I just, through osmosis, I believe, being part of American culture, picked up the basic beliefs about a God. But at that time, it was probably some higher being on a cloud, the standard thing when you don't really question your beliefs or question what people tell you. And so I really had nothing to fall back on.
So I wanted to ask you about something you talked about in the introduction of the book, where you had this feeling of sparkles on your hip.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. In making the afterlife connection, that I start with one of my stories, because ever since I opened up to the existence of a greater reality through my search for Susan, through a meditative practice, I have realized that we can directly communicate with those across the veil, and that they can give us signs that they're around and they can directly communicate with us. But that story to which you're referring is when I had been called out to Arizona to be a keynote speaker at a conference of bereaved parents. We call ourselves shining light parents rather than bereaved. But on the way to that conference, on the flight, I felt this sparkly feeling on my hip. It was tingly and bright. It was a sensation like I'd never had before. And I didn't know what that was, but I have had many, many experiences of those in spirit, now that I connect to other people's loved ones in spirit, giving me unusual sensations in my own body. So I tuned in and I asked, who's doing that? And it felt like it was coming from my own stepdaughter, Susan. I didn't get an answer right away, but it came up several times during that trip to Arizona. And when I asked her directly, Susan, is this you? She pointed out to me that she had a tattoo on her hip of a phoenix. And just as I got that message, I realized, well, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. And all around me, I was walking at the time, were trash cans with the image of a phoenix on it and the name and the word phoenix. And I started laughing and I said, why are you giving me this sparkly feeling? Why aren't you just communicating with me directly? So that evening at the conference, the speaker that evening was the wonderful medium Gordon Smith, and he was going to do a demonstration of connecting with spirit to the audience. I've been to so many of these, and it's really wonderful for those who don't realize how clear the connection can be with our loved ones to get direct messages with evidence. So that's the point of doing these demonstrations. And Gordon is just one of the best at that. He gets phenomenal evidence. And sitting there waiting for Gordon to speak, I thought, Susan, if that was you, I would love a message through Gordon. And immediately I felt selfish for asking that, because there were so many other parents in the audience that didn't already know what I knew. But I realized now that that was a setup from Susan for me to even ask for that. At the time, Gordon didn't know me. We're now very good friends. But when this happened, there he was on stage, and he was talking about how all of us as souls are these beautiful lights. And he said, and then one day somebody dies and you realize that they just turn into these sparkling lights. Notice the word sparkling. And he stopped in his tracks, just like when a spirit snags me, gets my attention. You kind of stop and you turn, and he looked straight at me. And again, he didn't know me. And he said, "That happened to you, didn't it? Someone you love passed. She wasn't directly related by blood, but this is a young woman and she's right here right now." Oh my gosh. My heart started pounding and I thought, "This is Susan." And I said, "Yes, it did happen to me." And he said, "Well, she wants you to know I am that light." Oh my gosh. I mean, what more evidence could you want? That sparkling feeling like a sparkler held against my hip was Susan. But you see, she came through in this unusual way from our normal conversations so that this message would be delivered in front of 1,000 Shining Light parents. And then again, later told in the foreword to my book, Making the Afterlife Connection, with such a beautiful message. There's more to it that I tell in the book, but it was just a magical moment. And if you could have been there in that auditorium to feel all of these people uplifted and sharing this amazing, wondrous connection right there in the moment, it's just one example of thousands of the way spirit works through our lives and how they've worked in my life.
So how did it come about for you that you went on this path to become what you do now, the mediumship?
When Susan died, our family was devastated. And I know it's no coincidence that just a few weeks before her death, I came upon a book by the medium James Van Praagh, who is just right up there with Gordon Smith. And it was my first book to read about mediumship, and I was fascinated by the possibility that death is not the end and that there are people called mediums who can connect with those who have passed. But his book seemed a bit far out there for me. I had never heard of the concept of souls across the veil doing things like we do here in this earthly life, and I set it aside. But when Susan passed, suddenly I needed to know, is this real? Does she exist like that? Can a medium connect with Susan? So I waited months and months and months until I found someone who met my very strict criteria for giving my husband and me a medium. It had to be someone who didn't know who we are. I wouldn't give them my last name because I was so skeptical. I didn't want them to look me up online and know anything at all about Susan or us. And I found a person who I trusted was the real deal, someone who truly could connect with spirit. And I took my husband to a reading. She brought through Susan with irrefutable evidence that I do share in the book. I'll share the most verifiable evidence right now in that after stating that there was a young woman there who died suddenly and she was in a brown uniform, the medium said that this young woman who was calling my husband daddy was bringing with her a little baby boy who she wanted to introduce to us. And the medium had no idea that Susan was pregnant, and most especially she was pregnant with a baby boy. So that reading obviously changed my life, showed me what I already knew in my soul from that moment of seeing her body, that Susan still existed. And I continued all of my efforts to connect with Susan myself through daily meditation. Susan came through to me, but it took a very long time. And she later told me she deliberately held back because I had so much to learn on my own before she came to me. And boy, did I learn through my own personal experience of expanded states of consciousness, daily meditation, trying to connect with Susan. I started connecting with all kinds of spirits. And I insisted every time on the kind of evidence that that medium gave us, because that's what turns skepticism into knowing.
And was your first experience of bringing through verifiable information when you were doing the psychometry?
Oh gosh, it was. I was thinking it was the experience when I first connected with a spirit knowingly, when I was told to do that. But you're right. There was a class that I went to learn about spiritualism, which is a science and a philosophy and a religion that talks about the belief in the afterlife and that we can connect with those who have passed. So I was just interested in the topic, and the teacher, Anne Gaiman, who later became the subject of my book, The Priest and the Medium, had each of us pair up and hold a piece of jewelry that belonged to the other person and see what we sensed. I had never tried anything like this, but I had already been meditating for probably 7 months daily at that point. And when I held this woman's piece of jewelry, I suddenly sensed the word sun, and I sensed that she had a new car, and I had a headache. Turns out she had a sun across the veil. She had a headache at that moment, and she had a new car. But I had no idea that I could even do this, and I didn't have tools to know what to do with that information. Today, if I would sense that, I would realize that that sun was right there present with us. I would dig into that and start a conversation with him. But that was the first moment when I realized, my gosh, we can discern information without our physical senses. It was very mind-opening.
And psychometry is that thing, isn't it? You hold something that belongs to something else, and it's like some information is somehow imprinted in the was it bracelet?
It was either a bracelet or a watch. I can't even remember right now, but that's absolutely correct, that there's that everything is a field of energy that is imprinted with energy information, which is consciousness. And by simply merging our consciousness with another field, we can discern information from it. In the case of psychometry, that is data. In the case of merging with the data field of a sentient being, you can have real-time conversations.
A lot of people have this idea that the afterlife is up in the skies somewhere, but I've heard that it's right here where we are right now.
That's correct. My guides tell us to refer to it as the everlife, because it's ongoing beyond time and space, and that there is nowhere else but here in awareness, because beyond space and time, beyond this experience of being in a body on the planet Earth, we are consciousness itself, having these experiences. And where is consciousness? It's right here. It is a field of energy and information, and the center of each of us, the core of each of us, is exactly the same in every other center when you go beyond space.
So the people that we've lost and others could be around us right now. And is it a thing where it's like they're in the room with us and they can see us, and it's almost like we're deliberately ignoring them?
They are here in awareness. I like to picture it as if they're on a different channel. Picture networks on a television station where you simply change the channel. All of those signals are right here, right now, but we tune into one station at a time. So right now, we are very much focused on this physical world that attracts our attention to the exclusion of other signals that are right here. When those in spirit want to get our attention, they have to usually do something to get our attention off this physical world. And they're pretty good at that. But when we want to get their attention, we simply need to think of them, send them love, and shift the channel with intention, and then shift our focus and tune in. It's a much subtler channel. It requires training in many cases, but it is right here, right now.
Everybody can do it.
Well, that's my understanding, because we all are these fields of energy and information. We are all consciousness. We all share the same core. And until you know that and change your belief to open up to the fact that, yes, we can all do it, you don't realize that you control the channel shifter.
So is there a feeling to it? It's like, what I wonder is if I was trying to do it and something popped into my head, I would feel like I'm just making it up. How would I know I'm not?
That is because you are in your head. And our energy fields are made up of multiple centers of awareness, but there are three main ones. There's the one in the head, and that's where we often receive signals, tune into signals, get our intuitive hits, have visuals in the upper center of soul awareness. We also have a soul center in the heart. That's where we feel the presence of our loved ones. That's where we feel the love and the emotions that connect us to others' fields. But Simon, we also have a third seat of awareness right in the belly. It's where we feel stability, where we feel truly present. And when we align all three of these centers and take what we sense in the head or the heart, and move our awareness down to the very core of us in that gut center, there is a landing and anchoring a feeling of solidity to what we're tuning into, where we simply know this is truth. This is real. I trust this.
Do you advise people to find a group where you can all practice on each other? And maybe you have a teacher in that group?
Oh, absolutely. I have taught many classes over the years. I have courses on my homepage that people take to this day, but I have classes with the Shift Network. And every time I do an event in person, people come up to me and tell me about having taken my courses. And more people say, I met with fellow students from that class years ago, and to this day, we still meet online or in person, weekly or monthly, and we've become the best of friends and we practice with each other. So it's really beautiful. I call this my Awakened Way community, because we can talk later if you'd like more about what the Awakened Way is. But there is nothing like practicing connecting with spirit, practicing with each other, because that helps us solidify our belief that this is possible and get used to those subtle energies that are so easy to dismiss if we don't dip into them regularly.
So there's this idea that spirits will communicate through a medium and they'll say, we know what's happening in your life. Maybe we like the color you've painted the walls, or you've got a new car. And it sounds like they can see everything you do, but maybe I wonder if they have discretion, because maybe there's sometimes there's stuff you don't want them to see.
Oh, absolutely. They can see everything we're up to, but this is where we have to realize that once we're no longer in these bodies, the bodies lose their importance. We hold on to the story that we, the role that we played here in a body as a soul. But when you leave the body, as you know from having written your book about near-death experiences, Simon, then we realize that we're souls. And with that awareness, we realize we were souls playing roles here. And we see our family members who are still in bodies as the souls we always have been. And so things such as naked bodies and showering and toileting and having sex and all these things we worry about them seeing mean nothing to them. They tell us they give us our privacy. They're not going to interrupt at intimate moments, but there are no hangups across the veil. So if we can get rid of those hangups and just say, hey, maybe it's true that being in water opens me more to this energy. So if you want to visit me in the shower, I'm okay with that, you know. Or you can set boundaries here and say, no, I'd prefer you come to me only in meditation, or only in the middle of the night if you have a very important message for me. We always have a choice.
So yeah, there's that thing of the thought that when people die and they go to the other side, they're still in human form, even though they may be energy. Is there a kind of thing where initially you have like a soft landing into the afterlife and you have a body, but eventually you begin to realize you don't need it?
Absolutely. I have a channeled session where my guides describe what the afterlife is like. That's on my YouTube channel. But they talk about each one of us as souls is going to loosen our grip on the role we played at our own rate as we continue to evolve. And also, if it serves those still here, that you continue playing that role across the veil, then absolutely the soul is going to do that. For example, if there is unfinished business with a loved one who has passed, and the one in physical form goes to a medium and needs an apology, or wants to give an apology, or thank yous, or ask for forgiveness, that soul is going to continue playing that role across the veil to complete that business, because it serves a greater purpose than just one individual soul, do you see?
And so when you land in the afterlife, I get the impression that people have younger bodies and healthier bodies as well.
Well, that's the beauty of realizing once you shed the body that you are consciousness itself. A field of consciousness, co-creative, that you can create anything in consciousness. But across the veil, without the body, it's instantaneous. So most people truly do say, well, I was at my best when I was around 35. And I want to live in this kind of a house for a while. And you just create exactly the experience that you want until, like you said, you realize, oh, I don't even need this body anymore. I think I'll just continue existing as this beautiful light and perhaps have another go at it in a body. But that role that the soul played is always going to be available as long as it serves someone here. So that can help those who are worried, what if my loved one reincarnates before I get across the veil? That soul will always be able to re-engender the role they played and greet you when you cross.
That's so okay. So if I die, Simon dies and then reincarnates, it's almost like it's not Simon that reincarnates, it's another point of energy from the soul?
From an oversoul, more likely. You know, we won't know this for sure till we cross, but just picture the oversoul like a deck of cards, and each soul is a hand that the oversoul is playing. And if that hand of cards needs to be continued to play, it will, as needed.
So when you're connecting with spirit and you might have somebody come to see you and they were hoping to have somebody come through that doesn't come through, is it because sometimes they're too busy? I think that's something I've heard. They say, oh, that spirit can't come and see you right now. They're too busy. But what are they doing?
I have never had a soul not come through because they're too busy. At that level, and orchestrating all gatherings is a higher consciousness that is always interested in evolution of the soul. So to be too busy to serve someone here whose intention is to find healing and comfort and growth would not serve the greater good. So that's not going to happen. There are other reasons why a certain spirit that we want to hear from might not come through. There could be just not compatible, coherent energy between the medium and the spirit across the veil. There could be that the person here has some issues they need to work on before they hear from that loved one. They have their own soul growth. We just have to learn to trust when that connection doesn't happen. But in most cases, it does.
I suppose if you go to a medium very soon after the death of a loved one, you might feel very, very low. You have all this grief. Does that kind of take your energy down and make it less likely you'd be able to connect?
It can affect it, but a really skilled medium realizes that we can overcome another person's grief by raising our energy. It's all about love. And so if we just realize why we're doing this for love and healing and raise our energy, we don't let the false belief that our client has to be in a good mood make the connection possible. But I do, for that very reason, I would ask most of my clients to wait a few months until that fog of grief lifts, because they often don't hear what's being said. They don't take it on board as clearly as once they've started to truly process that this is a major change, but their loved one is still accessible.
So do you feel you could connect to anybody in the afterlife if you wanted to, if you tried? I don't know, John Lennon or somebody?
We have the capability because we are beings of light, of consciousness, merging and connecting with other beings of light. It's malleable. It's like a dance. It's like a symphony. We're all different instruments and we can play our tunes. And if they resonate, those tunes will play beautifully together. But the question is, what purpose does it serve? Why would John Lennon's energy merge with mine? If it's just to satisfy my ego or my curiosity, that is probably not going to happen. But I have played that game. I have said I'd like to connect with somebody that will help my spiritual growth. I've asked specifically to speak to certain beings, such as Albert Einstein. And we made a very good connection. We have several times over the years. And each time he's given me evidence, information about himself and other people that I couldn't possibly know to validate what I already felt in my very core, that this is truly his spirit communicating with me.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom. And these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. There's somebody important in the afterlife that you work with, I believe. Is it Wolf? Could you tell us about them?
Wolf is one of many important beings across the veil that I work with, but he was a young man who took the nickname Wolf. His name was Mike Passacarnas, and he was struck and killed by lightning, just like my stepdaughter, Susan. I learned about him when I was giving a talk at Edgar Casey's Association for Research and Enlightenment, and I was sharing how my stepdaughter died from lightning strike, and this couple in the front seat gripped each other when they heard this, and they came up to me afterwards and they said, "Our son, Wolf, was killed the same way your stepdaughter was." But Wolf's dad, Mike Sr., was filled with questions because Wolf had left behind a piece of paper with a drawing that showed the exact spot where he was killed by lightning. And on that paper was a poem that said, "It is time for the light of nature to free my soul." And that drawing also showed what would happen after his death. So Mike and Beth were in search of answers. How could he have known how he was going to die, when and where, and what would happen afterwards? I knew right away because we're souls, all of us, here and now. And there are certain things that come to the surface of our awareness, and clearly, these came into Wolf's conscious awareness, and he left this evidence. So I volunteered to do a reading for them. This took a couple months till we actually met up. But Wolf came to me the day before the reading, dropped in on me in the early morning hours with, 45 pieces of evidence about himself and messages for his parents with no feedback, just solid information that they were able to verify later. And then in his reading, he came through with more information. There was no doubt in our minds that he was truly visiting with me. But there were certain things that didn't make sense. And over the next couple of months, the things that didn't make sense came to light. It was like solving a spiritual mystery. And ultimately, we pieced it all together to determine that Wolf had come back through me, through this divine connection with my stepdaughter, Susan, with my guide, Sanaya, with Mike and Beth, to leave a message for everybody, all of humanity, about how we are out of balance as a species. We're too much in the head, not enough in the heart. We're not trusting and even realizing our own divinity. And so I ended up writing a book called Wolf's Message, which is now, very grateful to say, an award-winning documentary that I'm taking around the country on tour and to various film festivals around the world now. And it's really changing people's lives because this is irrefutable proof. When you see the documentary Wolf's Message and you see the evidence that he left and you realize we're all souls, that's the bottom line. Why Wolf came back. It's now the crux of my teaching, Simon. I call it The Awakened Way. And it's based on Wolf's message. Three very simple principles that if you live by these principles, if you trust and act on these principles, it will change your life. Now, the first one is the awareness. We are not only human. We're souls. And Wolf's evidence and the way he passed shows that. The second one, we're part of one web of connections. It connects all that is, not just people. All of nature, all existence, all consciousness is a web of consciousness. And it shows itself in wondrous ways when we realize that that web is multidimensional. And the third principle, when you live the awakened way, you come to realize that when there is no separation because everything is consciousness, we call that love. Think about when you fall in love with someone, you just feel no disconnection. Everything's connected. Well, when we're all part of one web of connection, love then is the healing force of the universe, the creative force of the universe. If we could remember that and find the soul's love for each other, that would change our world. So that's who Wolf was, and that's my mission now, to share the awakened way with the world.
Because we hear about the planet's future and how there may be a great awakening and things are going to get better. But when you look around the world right now, it doesn't seem like it's getting better.
Doesn't seem that way at all. Through human eyes, my guide Sanaya say that you are making progress, however slowly, but it is actually accelerating now. And they jokingly say that if you look back in history, we can call those the Dark Ages. And it truly was a much more brutal time. Now they jokingly say you could call these the Dim Ages, which is a bit of an improvement, but we really need to turn up our own inner lights one by one to get into the Light Ages of being aware that we are not only human and treat each other as the souls we are, to bring into our everyday moment-by-moment lives what my guides call the sacred seven aspects of the soul, which include peace and joy, strength, courage, gratitude, humility, and divine unconditional love. If we are the presence of those characteristics, then we couldn't hurt each other. But the reason we still experience chaos is because we as souls came here to experience all of it for the growth that ensues. So instead of resisting what's happening, if we see these as opportunities to see how love changes things, how being aware that we're soul changes things, then one by one we'd awaken and that light does turn up.
So you mentioned Sanaya there. Could you tell us who that is or who they are?
Yes. These are my guides that I tune into every morning and throughout my day. They came to me 2010 on my birthday and I felt their powerful presence and I asked, who are you? And they said, we are a collective consciousness of guides and you will write and write as us. It turns out I now speak for them when I channel their guidance. I get daily messages from them, thousands and thousands of them, which I now publish daily on the Awakened Way app and on my website and Facebook page. We have about 100,000 people a day read their messages and just stay. This sounds like it's speaking to me today, because it is. These are universal messages that help us turn up our light. But Sanaya is always present with me when I teach, when I do interviews like this, and they're the ones that are making sure that the teaching that I share is coming from a higher place than just Suzanne's opinion of things.
You had an interesting experience with the word Eureka. Could you tell us what happened with that?
Oh my gosh, you're digging up stories that I had forgotten, but that one was so wondrous. I teach people that when you tune into spirit and you get a message or you get insights or you feel you've had a visit, yes, feel it land in the gut, in that belly, in that soul center there. But there is no problem putting those who come to you in spirit to the test by asking for a sign or asking them, what sign are you going to give me? So I had received some fabulous teaching from my guides. In fact, I believe in this case, it was an angel. And let me tell you, Simon, for this Navy commander to truly trust that angels are real took a lot of convincing, but I am convinced beyond any doubt that angels are thought forms, energetic beings that definitely exist on a higher channel and are here to help us. So I received a beautiful message from this angel and I said, what sign are you going to send me to validate this visit? Knowing they don't mind when we ask. And the response came back immediately, Eureka. And I thought, okay, well, this is how signs work. I don't go looking for that word, but it's going to show up in my life within the next day or so. And then I'll be able to trust this. And thinking about when's the last time I ever heard the word Eureka or saw it, it had been ages. Nobody said it often around me. So you're benefited when you take on a childlike attitude and think, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm just going to trust spirit, trust consciousness. So I said it out of my mind. And later that day, FedEx truck came by and dropped off a big package. It was something we had been waiting for. It was a sculpture that we had bought when we were visiting in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And it was delivered by FedEx, came in a big crate. My husband opened it up and inside was this sculpture. And the sculptor had included a magazine with an article about him and his work. he marked it with one of his pamphlets. So I saw the pamphlet and I opened the magazine to where he'd marked it. And the title of the article about him in very big letters across two pages, center spread in the magazine, was Eureka. That made my day. I was so excited about that sculpture, but that Eureka magazine, to this day, I have it sitting in my meditation room. Just as a reminder, once again, I know it. Angels are real, and they just love to show in miraculous, wondrous ways that they really are part of our lives. We're part of their lives, and the web is very real.
Because I think I heard about a time, was it you were doing a book signing, and two women came to talk to you about archangels?
That was the instance that truly convinced me that angels are real. I was early on in my journey. I was talking at a mind, body, spirit expo about my book, The Priest and the Medium. That book was about medium Anne Gaiman, married to a former Jesuit priest. Simon, when I wrote that book, I had no idea I was going to be a medium, but spirit knew it. My soul knew it. I just wanted to let the world know that mediumship was real, having had that reading with a medium who brought through our Susan. But by the time the book came out, I had discovered my abilities. I was now working as a medium and talking at expos like that around the country. So I had finished my talk and several people came up to me to sign the book. And these three women came up at the end of the line and they thanked me. And they said that the whole time I was talking, there was this giant archangel standing behind me. And at that time, I did not believe in angels and archangels, but I was open. That's very important, to be open to the possibilities. But I tried not to look disdainful or dismissive. And I said, well, thank you for telling me that. And as they turned to go, I was overcome with this feeling of love for these women that I couldn't explain. It just welled up in me very unexpectedly, very powerfully, to the point where I thought, I didn't say it aloud, I thought silently towards them, I love you. And one of the women, in perfect timing to my thought, turned around, looked at me with this beautiful smile on her face and said out loud, I love you too. I stopped and I reached out to her. I touched her arm and I said, why did you just say that? And she just smiled with this, I've got a secret look, and walked away. Well, that left me wondering, oh my goodness, was there really a being standing behind me? I suddenly really needed to know about angels, to dive in and learn all I could. Because now that I teach the Awakened Way, I talk about this process called the three E's. Educate yourself, experience for yourself, and engage these higher beings for yourself, any beings. So I went out as soon as I got back home from that expo, and I bought a book of angels to educate myself. But I needed to have a personal experience. I still didn't believe. The next day, I was doing a reading for a woman, and as I tuned in, I sensed an older woman across the veil. I described her to my client. I said, she doesn't feel like a blood relative. She feels like a friend, and she loves you so much. And by way of evidence, she's showing me you sitting with another woman, three of you holding hands, and now she's dealing out cards. Well, my client burst into tears. She says, this is a friend of mine, an older woman, who I used to sit in a prayer circle with another friend with. The three of us would hold hands and she would read tarot cards. So there's the evidence that this woman in spirit is here. I could feel her. I didn't need the evidence. And then I laughed out loud because I said, well, your friend in spirit is pointing at me and she's saying very clearly, angels are real. And I'm laughing at this message because it's important to me. And the client, now she's really crying. And I said, why are you crying so much? And she said, before I came in to your house here, I was talking to this friend and I said, I really want to hear from you. But if it's really you, I'm going to trust it's you if you talk about angels. So you see this web of connection all the people involved here that brought me to that place of really trusting angels are real. It took several connections, but I engaged that spirit across the veil, and now I engage the angels when I sense them. Educate, experience, and engage.
And did you have an encounter with Archangel Michael?
Oh, I've had multiple encounters with Archangel Michael. In fact, the one where I experienced Archangel Michael is real would well, there's, I think it's like a half hour video on YouTube, Archangel Michael is real. It's gotten quite a few views because people want to believe Archangel Michael is real, but he came to me with so much evidence that took away any doubt whatsoever. He continues to show up. He shows up in some of my readings. He shows up as this ethereal blue light that we can only see on the recordings sometimes, but you can't see it with your own eyes. I had one client was sitting with me. It had been a long time since I'd seen that beautiful blue light. And suddenly it came down on the screen. We were doing the reading by Zoom. I'm looking at her and I said, "Do you see that light over you?" It grew and then it went away and it grew and it went away. She said, "What is that?" You could see her looking around her room. She couldn't see it at all. And then it came down and it curved over her right breast. And I said, "I'm being told," and this is Archangel Michael, "that you have cancer in that breast and that you don't need to worry. It is being healed." And Simon, she told me, "I do have breast cancer." And not too much later, she was told that the cancer was gone. So that's a more up-to-date version of a visit from Archangel Michael than the one I tell in my book and on YouTube, but equally powerful.
I could imagine that a lot of people believe in archangels. And like with Michael, lots of people will be calling on him all at the same time. So how can he be in all these places at once?
Because it's a different channel with a much higher frequency. And that's why the angels are able to help us. So if you picture, I was teaching at a hotel once, and the spirit snags my attention with very mundane things often to use them as teaching points. I tell people, let spirit snag your attention and then pull the thread. Ask them, "Why did you just catch my attention with that? What's the meaning?" And they caught my attention with the carpet. And the carpet had this pattern of various shapes, some of them small, some of them larger, different shapes like circles and hexagons and diamonds. And they were all woven together in this web, like the web of consciousness. And the angels explained to me that we're like one shape on that carpet. And then our loved ones across the veil are a different shape once they no longer have a body. The angels are a different shape, and the archangels are these specific shapes that affect everybody. So it's just different frequency bands of consciousness allow those in the higher bands to not just bilocate and trilocate, but to be everywhere at once, because consciousness is not like it is when we're in a body where we have a very fixed focus on one experience at a time. Those in the higher realms are not limited the way we are. In fact, my definition for human consciousness is restricted awareness, and the soul is expanded awareness. Imagine the awareness of an archangel that is not restricted to helping just one person, but can hear the calls and the prayers and the desires of billions. It's beyond our imagining while in restricted awareness, but we see the miracles that happen all the time, and that allows us to believe.
So is there also a thing called Christ consciousness?
That's exactly, yes. And it's why Christ consciousness is able to help all of us, and why many people call on Jesus. I've had the energy of Jesus in the form of Christ consciousness merge with me over and over and over in meditation. I have another video called The Miracle of Christ Consciousness, which absolutely blew my belief system open wide to allow me to know that Christ consciousness is what connects all of us. It has nothing to do with your religion or your beliefs. It is the very web itself, unity.
Do you think sometimes we view Earth as like the center of everything. This is where all the lives happen and the spiritual stuff. But actually, we're just a very small part of all these other planets around the universe where all this stuff's going on there as well.
That is true. And where you put your focus is the center of awareness. It's so funny. You know, politicians think that they're where they live is the center of the universe. And we, each of us, because we're focused on our individual lives, feel that we are the center of our own universe. But we are not stuck in any one state of consciousness. And this is the beauty of meditative practices, where you can go beyond a fixed focus and realize that there is only one center where nothing changes. And that's beyond all stories, beyond all physicality, beyond all materialism. There is one core which has no center and limitless centers. You can come to know yourself as beyond all the stories, and then all of this makes sense.
Yeah, I wonder if Archangel Michael has been assigned to Earth, and then there's other planets, and they have their archangels.
This just made my lip twitch, and that's the way my guides say, there you go. You nailed it.
Are there any skills you developed in the military that you can apply to mediumship?
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. It's the discipline to sit daily and sit in the stillness and shift my focus from this body and this story to expanded awareness. But then some people say, well, I don't have military discipline. So I reframe it as commitment to your soul, commitment to love, commitment to each other. Being very organized has helped me a lot to be able to prioritize the many ways in which spirit is allowing me to help others. I have a lot going on all the time. I now have 9 assistants helping me because we have the videos and the podcasts and the classes and cruises and events and workshops and many, many free gifts and meditations. A weekly podcast is free. The Awaken Way app is free. We try to balance everything so that everybody can be included in what we call our Awaken Way community. But it definitely takes organization, prioritization, diligence. I remain physically fit, which I got in the habit of in the military. And that's really important when channeling spirit and when doing readings, because we're bringing through higher vibration and I don't want to blow out my circuits. So just any daily practice where I can get the oxygen flow and get my heart rate up just a little bit and just keep this body in shape and healthy. I don't obsess about it. I'll eat pizza, you know, and not be totally obsessed with healthiness, but it is very important. So those are definitely things I'm grateful for. Integrity that I learned in the military, the importance of being honest, the importance of service. Those are all ingrained in me. The importance of boundaries, the importance of leadership. Leadership when it's used to serve others. These were all instilled in me and are still part of me. And I'm just very, very grateful for that. The sense of camaraderie, of being part of something bigger than yourself. These are things that anybody who served in the military would understand.
It's amazing talking to you. I believe you're doing a free online event for World Meditation Day. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, December 21st is World Meditation Day, and so I'm going to take advantage of that and lead a guided meditation online for anybody who wants to tune in, and we're going to harness the power of coming together, just like in my channeling groups where we all send love. We're going to send it to each other and to our world. And I'm really glad you gave me the opportunity earlier to show what a difference it makes when we do that. So the amplification of people coming together from all over the world for just a few minutes is going to be tremendous. I'm going to ask my guides to lead us on a guided meditation. I don't know what they're going to talk about, but it's certainly going to be healing and helpful. We'll have information about that right on the homepage of my website, so people can get the link for that. But I'm very excited. We're going to have a guest speaker, Marcy Shymoff, who is a New York Times bestselling expert on happiness and raising your happiness set point, which is one of the many benefits of meditation. So really grateful to my team of assistants who are helping us put together this World Meditation Day, beautiful stillness practice.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Making the Afterlife Connection, The Journey from Doubt to Knowing That Death is Not the End. And people can get that on Amazon and other places?
That's right. And one other thing that I'm very proud of, besides my books and the HemiSync recordings and the podcast, is that so many people have questions. You've asked some fabulous questions today, Simon, but they have more questions. And we have now put together all of my channel material, all of my course transcripts, video transcripts into one database, and using beneficial AI from a group called Awaken AI, we have a virtual librarian who we've named Grace, and people can go to my website at suzannegeisman.com/yourquestionsanswered and ask Grace any question that Simon didn't ask me today, and the answer will come through from all that Spirit has taught me since, 2010, in a beautiful way. We've tested it over and over, and people are really having a great time with this. It's not like regular AI where it goes outside of, all over the internet. This is strictly the teaching from Sanaya and my teaching, and I hope people are curious enough to see what kind of answers you get, because I know it will prove helpful on your own spiritual journey.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I think I'll do that straight after this interview.
Yeah. Again, completely free, no strings attached. We don't collect your emails. It's all about furthering your awareness of who you really are as a soul.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Total joy. And I'm grateful to my team and Spirit, because the answers really flowed today. And that's possible for all of us when we ask our guides to show up in our lives and guide us.
Thanks a lot. This week, I was talking to Suzanne Geisman about her book, Making the Afterlife Connection, A Journey from Doubt to Knowing That Death is Not the End. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, is available on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or on Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.